We'll delve into the concept of land back in this segment. When people from the eastern United States drove west and settled the land in our region, they took most of it away from people who had lived here for thousands of years. Broken treaties, relocation, and death for Native people were features, not bugs. Land back is what it sounds like, a movement to restore lands taken away from tribes in the region, and as particular residents in California where the governor is on board. We recently previewed a symposium in Arcata to discuss land back and how it unfolds. Today we follow up on the symposium and the road ahead. Save California Salmon hosted the symposium. Regina Chickazola is the executive director and our guest once again in the exchange. Regina, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
We also have Ryan Reed with us, a tribal member with Yurok, Karuk, and Hoopa roots, working with Save California Salmon and an environmental studies graduate of the U of O. Ryan Reed, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Good to have you both. Regina, we did have a short preview on last week, an interview with Kutcher Risling Baldy. For anyone who missed it, give an overview, if you would, of what Land Back is all about.
Well, Land Back is just that. I think a lot of people have realized that the way that we have, I'm a non-Native person who works as an environmentalist, and I think a lot of people have realized that the way that the land has been managed has not been good. I mean, obviously, clear cutting, landslides, massive fires, like Rod just talked about, those are the things that the cultures that came here brought to the land, big dams. And as time goes on, we're realizing that there was traditional ecological knowledge and management being applied to the lands in the Northwest in California that was actually taking care of the land in a good way. And also in California, especially, the tribes don't have treaties and a lot of them don't have reservation or lands at all, or manage their sacred lands or have access to them. I think it's really important for environmental groups and environmentalists to support the actual return of lands to tribes so that they can begin to restore them and manage them in a good way, and also so people have somewhere to live and do ceremonies and be on the land. So as a non-Native person, that's where I'm coming from with it. And Save California Salmon has a lot of Native staff that's actually working within their tribes to do just that, make sure that land goes back to the tribes. And as you said, it's gotten to the point where land back is even part of California's climate planning and 30 by 30 plan, because it's just it's the right thing to do for the people and it's the right thing to do for the earth.
So that you mentioned you're giving a non-Native perspective and an overview. Ryan Reed, let me get your perspective as a tribal member.
Yeah, and I think it is pretty straightforward. As Regina mentioned, it's nothing more complex than returning the land to the original stewards and original people, first people of the land. But I think in that process, in returning it, I think there's a lot more significant elements that come with it. It's acknowledging the genocide, it's acknowledging the cultural erasure that has been forced upon indigenous people, especially in this area, in this region of Northern California, and increasingly so across the nation. And I think that just so many elements get wiped underneath the rug, they get erased over time. And so all these different elements, which, you know, the symposium really showcased, was the various elements each tribal entity, each tribal member has to endure, the loss of access, the loss of identity when we don't have access to our resources as well as the landscape itself. And so I think it really, we're talking about healing, we're talking about cultural and spiritual identity, we're talking about resiliency, and we're really just talking about the future generations. And I think that's the commonality of the conversation that we have with different California politicians, different non-Native, non-Indigenous folks, is that we're in a climate crisis. We're in this era of uncertainty of what the landscape, as well as the future of humans that we have on this earth. And I think that Indigenous knowledge, Indigenous sovereignty, and everything that comes with it, we have an understanding of what the landscape needs as well as what we need. And so I think there's a already established reciprocity concepts in which that we can re-implement, and I think that really comes with giving land back. Once we're able to have access, once we're able to have autonomy over land management, then I think everything else will fall suit.
We do talk about stewardship and land management a lot in Land Back. Is that the primary focus at this point, is large tracts of land, or at least good-sized chunks that can be managed for the good, for ecological good and for human good?
Yeah, I think that's essentially it. And I think it's important to know that it varies from tribal, from each tribe to tribe in the area. But I think essentially that's what we want Land Back for, is to have the ability to manage the landscape again for our medicines, for our foods, as well as to be able to teach, our younger generations of how to operate and sustainably live off the landscape, which is a huge issue within mainstream society today.
We were talking about the Land Back movement, which is gaining ground, particularly in California, in giving land back to tribes for management, if not ownership as well. Ryan Reed is a tribal member with roots in the Yurok, Karuk, and Hoopa tribes, also works with Save California Salmon, and has an environmental studies degree from the University of Oregon. Regina Chikazola is the executive director of Save California Salmon, and you can join us with your emails at jx@jeffnet.org. We got an email already from Patricia Ann in Eureka, who reminds us the conference recording is available at KMUD.org as KMUD, Redwood Community Radio, and Southern Humboldt County broadcast it live. Regina, how was the turnout, and what were some of the general concepts that emerged from the conference?
The turnout was amazing. We only had room for about 150, and way over 200 showed up, and so we had to have viewing rooms all throughout the university. And also the videos are also on our YouTube page. So if people go to Save California Salmon /Land Back, or go to YouTube Save California Salmon, people can watch the videos. But one of the things that we felt was really important is going through different ways that lands go back, and different big owners that want to give land back, or are at least being convinced that now it's the right thing to do. So the panels were based on different things. First, we had a keynote speaker from the Wiat tribe, of course, our host. And then we had a keynote speaker that was Kutcha, Dr. Kutcha Risling-Baldy, who is from Cal Poly Humboldt. And her speech was wonderful. And then we also had the state of California speaking, which I think is really important. The Natural Resource Agency was there and was speaking, and also helped with legal panels. But then we went into having the tribes speak for themselves and talk about different ways that they had gotten land back on national forest lands, through PG&E bankruptcies, through first rights of refusal policies, through different agencies in California. And then we went into universities. I don't think a lot of people realize that universities have taken over large swaths of land, and were given grants for that and taken straight from Native people. But not only that, they also hold a lot of cultural items, and they hold people's bones, too. So that discussion was really, really great and interesting. UC Chico, UC Berkeley, Cal Poly Humboldt all participated. The Wiat tribe participated, and they talked about how do you actually go through the process. And they also talked about how they've had to actually change laws, because a lot of laws, you know, still exists from, like, the mining rush. Our water rights laws are still from the mining rush, and a lot of other ones, too. So it's very easy, and Kutcha hit this, too, for institutions and cities to give lands back to each other. But there are a lot of laws that make it harder for tribes to get land back. So we talked about how do we change those. And then we went into land trusts and how it should be the goal of all land trusts to get the land back into the hands of the first owners. And then there was many tribal land trusts that were made up of either unrecognized tribes or multiple different tribes. Because California does have a rancheria system through much of the state, sometimes there has to be multiple tribal owners. So we went into how that works. And then there was a legal panel and a funding panel, and we talked a little bit about the Land Back Red Paper that came out, a report on how we get these things to happen. And just for your listeners, you know, some of these lands that we're getting back are federal lands, too. And there is a pretty big movement in Oregon, too. I just don't think that Oregon has officially come out and said they support the movement the way that California has.
Let's talk about that red paper. Ryan Reed, this is what in other circumstances we would call a white paper, isn't it? Ryan, you're still there?
Sorry, say it again.
I said with the red paper, talk about this. This is really kind of like a manifesto for land back, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, I think that it's just a complex, very intricate way of in what ways can we actually make it a practical reality, right? And I think that's one of the things that I think we're increasingly so with this movement of land back is understanding what that actually looks like. And I think that that's one of the elements that it could be found in the red paper is just how can we, each tribe who might not have an understanding or a way of going about it or individual how to go about it, I think this is what a good, very tangible description of how we might be able to go about it. I think that's essentially it, especially as communities with tribal communities are typically impoverished or very low income and don't have access or education or understanding of what policies or different concepts and how that relates to our circumstances from tribe to tribe.
The red paper, Kutcher Risling Baldy, we've mentioned several times from Humboldt, Cal Poly Humboldt is the principal author. It gives the historical record. It's quite explicit with even trigger warnings in there. It is quite grim, obviously, at times. But it does come up again and again, the identification of lands as wilderness or empty. Back in the so-called pioneer days, when in fact there were people living there. Now, Ryan, in terms of environmental restoration, though, talk about lands that you seek through land back and often how different they are from what they were back in the days when the indigenous people managed them.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge pivotal point for our traditional ecological knowledge that we have. And we can't come into landscape now after 150 years of fire suppression and mismanagement. We can't go into our landscape and manage it the way that our ancestors how they managed it just a couple of generations back. And so there's a rearticulation. There's a different approach that us in contemporary times that have to redevelop. And I think just reintroducing fire is one of those concepts in. And how do we do that? And I think that there's a lot of things that we kind of take for granted in terms of restoration. How fast does the ecosystem, how fast does a watershed bounce back when dams are removed or when fires reintroduced or when, ancient management strategies are reintroduced into the landscape. And I think that's one of the things that, us as indigenous and tribal entities are trying to do is just like, all right, let's just put our foot in the door right now. Let's just reestablish these certain elements in which we know work, but obviously we can't go and just put fire in the landscape because of this catastrophic wildfire era and the crisis that comes with it, right? And I think that it's one of those elements that we know that we have to restructure it, but giving us land back is that opportunity. It's that avenue in which we can have the ability to do so. Without land, we can't do anything. We have to go through all this bureaucratic and red tape to collaborate with different agencies, different private owners in order to even think about re-implementing traditional and ancient strategies of management.
Regina Cecozzola, we've been kind of theoretical so far. Talk about in practice. I mean, can you tell us about some areas? We did mention or heard from Kutcha before the conference about Tulawat being given back to the Wiat tribe, for example.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of examples, and the red paper does go into that, and it's very exciting. And one of the things Kutcha said at the conference, which really hit a lot of people, is like how joyful all these land back ceremonies and examples and people getting together have been and how hopeful people are about this. But we had people from Oakland, the Segorite Land Trust that was at the conference, and they had gotten land back through the city of Oakland, through co-management agreements, but also just giving the land back proper. And then they also had gotten land back from individual landowners in the city of Oakland that they're working to restore and bring back traditional management. There's also quite a land that's come back through the PG&E bankruptcy, not mm-hmm. this one, but the one before. And now the California Public Utility Commission actually has a first right of refusal policy to make that more institutionalized. But pretty much what happened is when a bankruptcy happens, a lot of times lands have to get sold off very quickly or given away very quickly. And tribes such as the Pitt River Tribe were able to get back major areas of land within the Hat Creek watershed through that.
Okay.
Potter Valley Tribe was...
All right. So yeah, I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off here because we're getting short on time, but we've learned a lot, and I very much appreciate it. Regina Chickazola is the executive director of Save California Salmon. Ryan Reed works with SCS and is a member of the tribes in the region.